things down so I wouldn't talk too long. It's impossible to understand the beginning of this church without knowing the story of the 1997 shipwreck that was events at Epworth United Methodist Church. That's a long and sad story for another day, but it's important to locate our history in connection with that trauma. So if you were a person who was a part of Epworth United Methodist Church before April of 1997, would you just raise your hand and look around the room? A small group of us started out exploring the idea of a new church start. Some of you who just raised your hands were in that first meeting. And we ask ourselves, surely the city doesn't need another church. Is that what we need to do? But there just was not any church like the one that we wanted and dreamed of in the city then. So we didn't want to compete with other people and other churches. So we decided to pray for the people that no other church wanted. At that time, one of my closest friends was Stephen Hardway, and his clarity was part of what helped me decide that I was willing to try, even though I had never wanted to be the pastor of a new church start. The first Sunday we met in the sanctuary at Mayflower, April 13th, 1997, we had about 130 people who came to worship. If you were there that day, raise your hand. Yeah, quite a few people were there that day. A number of the people that were there were just well-wishers, but our numbers continued to stay up over 100 in weekly attendance that summer and for most of that year. It's impossible to imagine the beginning of this church without knowing something about what the HIV/AIDS epidemic was like in the 1990s, before the new drugs that we have now. At that time, gay men were often shunned in public places because of deep fear about the disease. The first weeks we met as a church, we had a class for American Sign Language because a couple of our members were hearing impaired. And the pastor at the time at Church of the Savior, not too far from here, had given me the keys to the building, saying that we could have classes there during the week since we only had access to Mayflower a couple of hours a week. We had a sign language class there, and we had meetings, and some of you were in that meeting. But after only the first week, that pastor had to come back to me and apologize and tell me that we were not welcome to meet there. After all, some of the trustees had found out who we were and refused to let us use the space. Things like that happened pretty often in those early years. Mayflower let us have services in their building, but we couldn't even store anything during the week at first, so we had to pack everything up. We call it church in the box, and I can still see Stephen Hardway setting up the name tags and the welcome table every week. Later, they let us store some things in part of a closet during the week. We worshiped there for 15 months. Stephen was an important and courageous HIV/AIDS activist who had helped to form ACT UP. He died during the first year of Open Arms. At some point not long later, we rented some office space in the Harmony Building. Some of you may remember that, where we had access to a meeting room. Wow, we could have Bible studies. It was so exciting. The congregation learned about the UCC and went through a discernment process about whether or not, as a congregation, we would join the UCC. And even after we decided we wanted to join, then the district had to go through a process. We went through a process for about a year. And when the ecclesiastical council came around for them to vote on allowing us to join, the vote was not unanimous. Back then, there were more rural UCC churches, and some were rather conservative. But they did vote to allow us to join, so we became a part of the United Church of Christ. It was either in 1998 or 1999, Bill Smiley went with me to Wichita to the annual KO conference meeting. It wasn't the first time we had gone, but that particular year was the first year after we had joined officially that we were there. And at the awards banquet at the KO conference, the Peace and Justice Committee gave an annual award every year for social justice leadership. And that year, they gave the award to the Oklahoma District for accepting Church of the Open Arms. And Bill Smiley turned to me. He's still trying to figure out who these UCC people are. And he said, "Did they just give them an award for accepting us?" So yeah, that happened. The early years were unimaginably hard. Every week I would wonder if I was going to continue to get it paid. Month after month we struggled, but we also had wonderful times. Picnics in the park, kite flying celebration, retreats, mission trips, Easter sunrise services in lots of places, lots of great sharing and learning together. I remember that at our 5-year anniversary, I reflected that though we were mostly younger people then, we had already had 9 funerals. 7 of those funerals were for people who were HIV positive. 5 of those funerals were suicides. Many of those people who had died were key leaders, like Glenn Ritchie, who was the best friend of Jane Askins. Together every Sunday after church, they would count the offering. They were absolutely key leaders. Joe Hodges, Franklin Roberts, who donated the keyboard, Richard Potts, who was a special friend of Mark and Linda Herndon, and others. We paid the price for our inclusiveness over and over again. At our first Christmas program, Michelle Wirth, who was one of our founding members and who was transgender, was the narrator of the Christmas program. And after the Christmas program, which was well attended, one of our other key members, who was an important donor, asked me not to have Michelle read up front again because a visiting granddaughter had been confused and frightened by Michelle. But Michelle continued to be a key leader until she died of lung cancer later, and we had her funeral here. I remember the Healing the Wounds of Racism workshop we had beginning in 1999. Pat Proctor and Alois Glover were important leaders in that group. We had had their wedding and then later each of their funerals here. But the commitment to dismantling white privilege and exploring ways to truly become more multicultural and multiracial as a community go back to the beginning. And it's a joy to look back at the pictures of Clara Looper visiting and speaking over the years. When we finally gathered up the courage to do our first real capital fund drive to buy a building, we had been renting that space downtown that my kids refer to as the ghetto church. We had been meeting there for more than 3 years. We brought in a national UCC staff consultant who led us in a process for a number of months. Our average attendance then was about 80 or 90, and based on our giving, the consultant thought that we should be able to reach a goal in the fund drive of about $300,000 to be paid out over 3 years. We had been looking at various buildings for sale, and we knew we'd be lucky to find something that would suit our needs for about $500,000, but the UCC said if we had $300,000 in pledges, they'd loan us $500,000. So we went looking all around town, and Debbie Teal and others and I drove around and around looking at buildings for sale. The fund drive went on for months. The whole place was decorated. All of our communication, everything was all themed related to this fund drive of Noah's Ark. And it was all a big buildup to this celebration Sunday that was going to happen. And that was when we were going to announce all the pledges. All the leaders were worn out from pulling all this together and doing all the work. the last week, we started gathering up all the pledges right before Celebration Sunday, and it looked pretty bad. The total just added up to about 140,000, far short of our goal of 300,000. And then a couple of days before Celebration Sunday, a sign went up for sale at 3131 North Penn, about a block from where Mindy lived. And this building was for sale for $140,000. Of course, it had to have a lot of renovation. The heat and air didn't work. It needed a new roof and so forth. So we had to borrow more money than that, but it really did feel like a miracle. The consultant was flying in for Celebration Sunday. We felt like celebrating again. And then that Saturday, about midnight, I got a phone call saying that one of the kids in the youth group, Justin, who was a young gay teenager, had shot and killed himself. His parents had been coming to the church with him for about a year. He had been the one who had read the Christmas story on Christmas Eve at our service just a few months before. After spending much of the night with his parents in their home where he had killed himself, I had to break the news to the congregation at the beginning of the Celebration Sunday service. Many of our celebrations have been layered with hard knocks and complications. But although we grieved and struggled hard, we also have had phenomenal joy, fun, and passionate good times. Of course, the KKK drama was memorable. Although it seems funny now, it was no fun at all when the police had all four lanes of Penn blocked off for days, for about a block in front of the building both ways, because they were afraid somebody might toss a bomb in the window. I like remembering the times when famous people came here to speak, people like Mel White with Soul Force, or Jimmy Creech, or Bill Johnson, the first openly gay man who was ordained in a mainline denomination, or Rita Nakashima Brock, or Randall Bailey, biblical scholar, or Hueda Aref, or Jane Caputi. But mostly, I like remembering your beautiful faces lined up for communion. When a pastor leaves, there's a natural and healthy separation process that's difficult and sometimes involves feelings of abandonment, anger, and even negative reconstructions of the person that help with separation. But please know that when I sit in church on Sunday morning in Tulsa, and especially on days when we have communion, I often still weep because I miss you so much and love you so much. History's funny. Some people approach church as if it's all about believing events that happened thousands of years ago, as if God would test people and bless them or punish them based on whether or they or not they believed something in ancient history happened a certain way, like whether there was a virgin birth or a bodily resurrection. For me, the focus is on what's real now, what we truly experience, including mysteries now that we can't explain and don't understand. Here in this community, I've experienced the living power of the divine spirit in you, with you, and through you. I've experienced the living body of Christ. Some people say you can't change the past. I'm pretty convinced we can't avoid distorting the past. The history of this church is only important if it still smolders with memories and remnants of some live, burning power. So I can't wait to see what God is going to do next in this church. If there was one thing I could impress upon you to remember about Church of the Open Arms, if there was just one thing, I'd ask you to remember to take time every day, to invite that power greater than yourself to expand your heart and mind, to spend time to unplug from the computer and the music and the TV and plug in through prayer to that force that has led us and made a path where there was no path. I am thankful for lots of people who have made sacrifices and generous gifts of money, talent, creativity, love, time, and energy to build this congregation. My children and those closest to me sacrificed much and went without attention and time from me that they needed, and of course they didn't sign up for that, and I am accountable for that and many mistakes that I made over the years. I'm thankful to my family and friends who supported me so I could keep going, and I'm thankful to those of you who were here for different parts of the journey. Some early on, life took you in other places for various reasons. I'm thankful to those of you who hung in there and those who came later with fresh vision and energy and new direction for chapters that will unfold way beyond what I'm able to imagine. And of course, I'm grateful for the wonderful ministry of Kayla, who is such an inspiration to me. We started this congregation because the type of church we dreamed of didn't exist. And of course, Church of the Open Arms doesn't live up to all of our brightest dreams either, right? But that's okay, because the dream calls us onward toward a future way, way beyond anywhere any of us have been before.